looking at Jameson, her eyes soft. Presently she touched his hand. "Gage," she said, "do you have a girl waiting for you somewhere?"
"No," he replied. "There's never been one."
She leaned to him a little. She said, "I told you once that there was a man back home." "I thought there was, Gage. But I know now that there never was enough between us." She tilted her head upward. "Gage, whatever happens, I want you to know I love you."
His arms went around her. He pulled her to him, and their lips met in the darkness.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Music and Memories, followed by USA Today at 2.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 50 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the low 40s. Then tomorrow partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night mostly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Thursday, January 28th, 2021 from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. We do have quite a few stories for you today, and here are some of those headlines of those stories now. South Carolina detects first U.S. cases of COVID-19 variant first seen in South Africa. U.S. infections are decreasing, but 80,000 more Americans could die in the next 3 weeks. COVID-19 numbers are dipping in the U.S., even as variants are lurking and the vaccine rollout lags. It will be months before all Americans get vaccines, White House COVID-19 advisor says. Another lab study suggests Pfizer vaccine works against variants identified in the U.K. and South Africa. Fauci not comforted by protection from current vaccines against South African variant. Department of Defense receives FEMA request for military to boost COVID-19 vaccinations across the U.S. Biden officials expected to meet with COVID-19 vaccine distributors today. Epidemiologist outlines red flags he still sees with variants, testing, and vaccinations in the U.S. German Vaccine Commission recommends AstraZeneca's vaccine should not be given to people over 65. Europe needs vaccines, so why is it squabbling with AstraZeneca? Could post-vaccine life mean we return to normal? Not just yet. Pulling off Tokyo 2020 will be a logistical nightmare, and the clock is ticking. Those articles and more, if we have time, are coming up in the next few minutes. First, we'll take a look at the numbers. From the Texas Health and Human Services, we get the numbers for Ector County today. 6,944 confirmed cases. Probable cases, 6,445. Fatalities, 292. Estimated active cases, 1,724. Estimated recovered, 11,373. And we get our Midland County numbers from an article from today's Midland Reporter Telegram. The number of people vaccinated through the mass vaccination program at the Horseshoe topped 2,000 through Tuesday, according to statistics from Midland Health. Midland Health reported 251 vaccinations on Friday, the soft opening at the facility, followed by 858 on Monday and 978 on Tuesday. Officials said they are hoping to accommodate around 1,000 a day as mass vaccinations continue. The program involves people registering with Midland Health and then coming in when their appointment time takes place. Midland Health officials stated earlier this week there were, as of Tuesday morning, 7,000 people scheduled to get their vaccines at the mass vaccination site and another 8,000 more on the waiting list. In Odessa, they administered close to 1,700 vaccines on Wednesday, according to Medical Center Health System's Facebook page, and around 6,500 through 4 days at its vaccination site at Ratliff Stadium. The city of Midland on Wednesday also reported two more COVID-19 related deaths. The number of Midland County residents that have died during the pandemic because of coronavirus is up to 219. Now we'll take a look at coronavirus briefs. Governments working to immunize people against the coronavirus are in a race between the spread of new virulent variants of the virus and the rollout of new vaccines, said a top global health official. Today we face a pandemic paradox. Hans Kluge, the World Health Organization's regional director for Europe, told reporters Thursday. Vaccines on the one hand offer remarkable hope. On the other hand, newly emerging variants of concern are presenting greater uncertainty and risk. Global infections have topped 100 million, with more than a quarter of the cases in the United States. In Brazil, the Amazonian city that hatched a new variant has been crushed by it. Believed to have been circulating in the Amazon since December, the variant now appears to be the dominant coronavirus strain in Manaus. South Africa, already one of the countries hit worst by the coronavirus, has been ravaged by a more transmissible variant that has produced an enormous surge in new cases and deaths that has far surpassed previous waves of the pandemic. Olympic officials continue to insist Tokyo Games will take place as scheduled in July, with a top Japanese Olympic official calling on President Biden to issue a public vote of confidence that the Games could be held safely. We'll have more in another story later about the Olympics. In Europe, vaccine shipments have been delayed and European Union leaders are being criticized for mishandling the ordering process. In some areas, inoculation programs have ground to a halt. New York undercounted COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes by about 50%, according to a report. EU orders inspection of AstraZeneca's Belgium site following vaccine delivery delays. Most U.S. states have identified cases of coronavirus variant first spotted in the U.K., the CDC reports. As World Health investigators in Wuhan leave their two-week quarantine, China says it will cooperate on virus tracing. COVID vaccinations will not be a prerequisite at the Tokyo Olympics, says CEO, as swimming qualifier is postponed. Expect at least another 10 weeks of vaccine shortages, says German health minister. Now to today's articles. This story that developed this morning. South Carolina detects first U.S. cases of COVID-19 variant first seen in South Africa, from CNN's Michael Nettleman. South Carolina officials have announced the United States' first two confirmed cases of a more contagious coronavirus strain first spotted in South Africa. There is no known travel history or connection between the cases, both adults, according to a release Thursday from the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control. One case was confirmed to the department late yesterday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the other was identified by the state's public health laboratory while testing samples over the past several days. The variant, known as B1351, has raised concerns over being more transmissible than other versions of the virus and potentially evading the immune protection offered by antibodies. Experts say they believe vaccines will still be effective against the variant. The arrival of SARS-CoV-2 variant in our state is an important reminder for all South Carolinians that the fight against this deadly disease is far from over, Dr. Brandon Traxler, the health department's interim public health director, said in a statement Thursday. The variant has been detected in over 30 countries, according to the World Health Organization. U.S. infections are decreasing, but 80,000 more Americans could die in the next 3 weeks. From CNN's Christina Maxoris. COVID-19 cases in the United States may be trending in the right direction, but with new variants circulating in the country, experts say there is still reason to worry. New data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows a variant first spotted in the UK has been detected in at least 28 states. Minnesota officials also recently announced the first U.S. case of another variant detected in a traveler from Brazil. They're more transmissible, which can lead to increased number of cases and increased stress on an already overtaxed system, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said on Wednesday. With more than 80,000 deaths to coronavirus in January, the pandemic has hit the U.S. the hardest this month. But a CDC ensemble forecast projects there could be another 84,000 virus-related fatalities by February 20th. As the country still grapples with vaccine allocation and distribution problems, federal data shows only about half of the vaccine supply that has been distributed in the U.S. has been administered. According to one official, it could be months until every American who wants the vaccine can. Governments working to immunize people against the coronavirus are in a race between the spread of new virulent variants of the virus and the rollout of new vaccines, said a top global health official. Global infections have topped 100 million, with more than a quarter of the cases in the United States. COVID-19 numbers are dipping in the U.S. even as variants are lurking and the vaccine rollout lags, from CNN's Jason Hanna. Make no mistake, the U.S. is still at one of its worst spots in the coronavirus pandemic. Daily deaths are near a peak. The other daily stats still are stunningly high compared to where they had been before a late 2020 surge. Yet COVID-19 case and hospitalization numbers have been falling. Vaccines are here, more versions may be near, and warmer weather is approaching. Some health experts say the U.S. has a chance to experience life a little more normally by early fall. Infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci made that prediction last week, assuming 70 to 85% of the U.S. population was vaccinated by the end of the summer. Standing in the way are lagging daily inoculation rates, vaccine supply shortages, and hesitation by some to get the shots. And variants of the virus that appear to be more transmissible are turning up more frequently, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which warns they could worsen the already raging spread of the virus. Still, President Joe Biden's administration says it's taken steps to hasten vaccinations, and experts, including Fauci, are optimistic that current vaccines will largely protect against known variants, though they warn the more the virus spreads, the greater chance mutations could defeat current vaccines. So as the nation waits for widespread vaccines, the steps people should take to slow the spread are the same as always. Wear masks, avoid congregate settings, and wash hands, experts have said. It will be months before all Americans get vaccines, White House COVID-19 advisor says, from CNN's Adrian Vogt. Andy Slavitt, senior advisor to the White House COVID-19 response team, said it will be months before all Americans who want a COVID-19 vaccine can get one. I want to level with the public that we're facing two constraining factors. The first is getting enough supply quickly enough, and the second is the ability to administer the vaccines quickly once they're produced and sent out to the sites, Slavitt said. We are taking action to increase supply and increase capacity. But even so, it will be months before everyone who wants a virus will be able to get one, he added. Slavitt said so far this week, the Biden administration has hit its initial target of 1 million vaccinations per day. That number of doses is the floor, not the ceiling, he said. The administration has delivered 47 million doses to states and long-term care facilities, yet 24 million doses have been administered, according to Slavitt. Any stockpile that may have existed previously no longer exists. Our practice is to maintain a rolling inventory of 2 to 3 days of supply that we can use to supplement any shortfalls in production and to ensure that we are making deliveries as committed, he said. On Tuesday, Biden announced a series of measures aimed at ramping up coronavirus vaccine allocation and distribution, including the purchase of 200 million more vaccine doses and increased distribution to states by millions of doses next week. With those additional doses, Biden said there would be enough to fully vaccinate 300 million Americans, nearly the entire U.S. population, by the end of summer or early fall. Another lab study suggests Pfizer vaccine works against variants identified in the UK and South Africa, from CNN's Jamie Gumbrett. More preliminary results in the lab suggest the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine will be effective against new, more contagious coronavirus strains first identified in South Africa and the UK. As in previous studies, antibodies were slightly less effective against the virus with three key mutations in the variant identified in South Africa. However, Pfizer and BioNTech said the small differences in viral neutralization observed in these studies are unlikely to lead to a significant reduction in the effectiveness of the vaccine. The researchers engineered versions of the virus in the lab that carry some of the mutations found in the variants. They tested them against blood taken from 20 people who had received two doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine as part of a clinical trial. The lab study, conducted by researchers at Pfizer and the University of Texas Medical Branch, did not test all the mutations found in the variants, and researchers note that clinical data are needed to firm conclusions about vaccine effectiveness against variant viruses. The results were posted Wednesday on the preprint server BioRxiv and have not yet been peer-reviewed or published in a medical journal. Pfizer and BioNTech said Wednesday, a new vaccine against the variants does not appear to be necessary. In a news release, they said they will continue to monitor strains and will conduct studies to monitor how effective the vaccine is in the real world. Pfizer said earlier this week it was laying the groundwork to create a vaccine booster that could respond to coronavirus variants if necessary. Moderna, the maker of the other coronavirus vaccine authorized in the United States, said this week its COVID-19 vaccine created antibodies that neutralized the coronavirus variants first found in the United Kingdom and South Africa, and it planned to test a booster against the variants out of an abundance of caution. Fauci not comforted by protection from current vaccines against South African variant. From CNN's Naomi Thomas. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said on Thursday that the coronavirus variant, first identified in South Africa, is troubling to him, and that work is already being done on a booster vaccine dose that is directly aimed at the variant. "The one in South Africa, George, troubles me," Fauci told ABC's George Stephanopoulos. "This is something that is now really dominating the South Africa scene. When you look at the vaccines that we have available now, the neutralizing antibodies that they induce. So we're talking about things just in a test tube. When you measure that against the South African, isolate it as is diminished by multifold in its ability to cover it." He added, "It's still within the range of what you would predict would be protective, but I take no great comfort in that." Fauci said that they are already trying to stay a step or two ahead of things by making vaccines along the same type that we made for the ones we're giving now, but having it directed specifically against the isolate that's in South Africa. "This means that if it's necessary, though it may not be, we'll already be on the road to being able to give people a boost that directs against the South African isolate. That's what we're doing now, so we're not taking any chances." Department of Defense receives FEMA request for military to boost COVID-19 vaccinations across the U.S. from CNN's Barbara Starr. The Pentagon has received a request from Federal Emergency Management Agency to provide assistance to President Biden's efforts to boost COVID-19 vaccinations across the country in the first 100 days of the new administration, according to two defense officials. Both departments are now in intensive discussions on how the military can help FEMA, including the possibility of sending up to 10,000 troops to vaccination mega hubs. The effort could involve using both active duty and National Guard forces. "Part of the discussion is agreeing on what are the most urgent tasks that they can handle," officials said. The Department of Defense has added a 2:30 p.m. briefing today on their COVID-19 efforts. Biden officials expected to meet with COVID-19 vaccine distributors today. From CNN's MJ Lee. Members of the Biden administration's COVID-19 team are expected to hold a call with top officials representing major coronavirus vaccine distributors later today, CNN is told by a source familiar with the planned meeting. This comes within days of the administration announcing that it would be increasing the allocation of COVID-19 vaccines to states starting next week and announced plans to significantly ramp up vaccine supply with the goal of vaccinating 300 million Americans by the end of the summer. The call is expected to be a forum where distributors of the COVID vaccine can pose any questions they might have to the Biden administration on the White House's vision for distributing vaccines across the country as efficiently as possible, as top Biden advisors have continued to say that they did not inherit a working federal distribution plan from the Trump administration. Going back to the transition, the Biden's team has been in regular contact with various parties in the industry. Epidemiologist outlines red flags he still sees with variants and testing and vaccinations in the U.S. from CNN's Adrian Vogt. Michael Osterholm, the director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, warned that the next 6 to 14 weeks will bring something that we haven't even come close to experiencing yet. Osterholm said on CNN's New Day that he is worried about the variants circulating in the United States. If we even hope we can get 100 million vaccine doses in people by the end of March, that means only about 12% of the population will still be protected. On the heels of cities like Los Angeles easing some coronavirus restrictions, Osterholm said that he understands pandemic fatigue, but thinks we are about to see the darkest of days. Now is not the time to ease up, because again, we will be pumping the brakes after the car is wrapped around the tree if we do that, he said. And so I can't put it in any more stark terms, but I fear that what will happen? It's only when our hospitals are overrun, and that seems to be the benchmark right now. While Osterholm lauded the Biden administration's plans to tackle the pandemic and says they are working on tracking variants, he worries that COVID-19 testing staff are being transferred to vaccinate people. We have got to do both, testing and vaccinations, he said. German Vaccine Commission recommends AstraZeneca's vaccine should not be given to people over 65, from CNN's Claudia Otto. Germany's Vaccine Commission has recommended that the coronavirus vaccine developed by AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford should not be given to people over 65 years old, the German Interior Ministry said Thursday in a statement. According to the statement, a study by the Standing Committee on Vaccination at Germany's Robert Koch Institute has found that there is insufficient data on the effectiveness of the vaccine for this age group. It is not possible to make a statement for the effectiveness of the AstraZeneca vaccine in people over 65 years of age, the statement said. Europe needs vaccines, so why is it squabbling with AstraZeneca? From CNN's Charles Riley. The European Union has been locked in a very public and acrimonious fight with AstraZeneca over vaccine delays. Although the heat may have slightly cooled after a meeting late Wednesday, the problem still is yet to be solved. AstraZeneca says it can't deliver as many doses as the European Union expected. The European Commission, which ordered the vaccine on behalf of EU member states, says this is unacceptable and the drug maker must find a way to increase supply. The dispute is playing out against a dire backdrop. EU countries, including Germany, are running low on vaccines, and the slow rollout of shots across the block is threatening a very fragile economic recovery from the pandemic. After Wednesday's meeting, EU Health Commissioner Stella Kyriakides said the discussion with AstraZeneca CEO Pascal Soriot had a constructive tone, but she requested more information from the company on its deliveries. Could post-vaccine life mean we return to normal? Not just yet, from CNN's Kara Fox. Mass COVID-19 vaccination programs are underway in many countries around the world, offering the first glimmer of hope that life as we knew it could be back within our reach. The UK was the first country to begin vaccinating its citizens with a fully vetted and authorized COVID-19 vaccine, and is currently among the countries with the highest number of vaccines deployed per capita. But just how quickly can the UK, and perhaps the rest of the world, expect to return to some form of normality? The truth is, not very soon. Public health experts largely agree that it's unrealistic to bet on the vaccine being a magic bullet to end the pandemic. They say coronavirus safeguards, such as masks and social distancing, are likely to remain in place for several months at least. Dr. Paul Hunter, a professor in medicine at the University of East Anglia, told CNN that many factors must be considered before the UK's lockdown is relaxed, starting with a big drop in severe cases and deaths. The issue comes down to numbers, really, Hunter said. Pulling off Tokyo 2020 will be a logistical nightmare, and the clock is ticking. From CNN's Selena Wang and Joshua Berlinger. UFC had Fight Island. The NBA had the bubble. Tokyo 2020 may need a miracle. After the COVID-19 pandemic forced organizers to delay the Summer Olympics last year, the games are now set to begin in less than 6 months, on July 23rd, and major questions remain as to how Japan plans to pull off what could prove to be the most complex sporting event ever held, one involving more than 11,000 athletes from more than 200 countries who must be kept safe from a virus that has infected 100 million people and killed more than 2 million. On Wednesday, the International Olympic Committee, IOC, President Thomas Bach vowed that the event would go ahead. "Our task is to organize Olympic Games and not to cancel Olympic Games," he said, adding that the IOC is working day and night to host a safe event. It may just be doable. The UFC and the NBA proved last year that it's possible to safely hold a major sporting event during the pandemic as long as those involved are willing to make some sacrifices and get creative. UFC moved all its fights to an island in Abu Dhabi, while the NBA finished its 2019-2020 season at a campus in Disneyland with stringent rules to keep the virus out. Both proved successful, but those two events pale in comparison to the Summer Olympics in terms of sheer size and complexity. And finally, I have one longer article that we may have time to read from the New York Times, which is giving a closer look at how vaccine manufacturers are working against the new variants. As virus grows stealthier, vaccine makers reconsider battle plans. Vaccines by Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech effectively protect recipients, but in a worrying sign, they are slightly less effective against a variant found in South Africa, by Denise Grady, Apura Mandavili, and Katie Thomas, published January 25th. As the coronavirus assumes contagious new forms around the world, two drug makers reported on Monday that their vaccines, while still effective, offer less protection against one variant and began revising plans to turn back an evolving pathogen that has killed more than 2 million people. The news from Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech underscored a realization by scientists that the virus is changing more quickly than once thought and may well continue to develop in ways that help it elude the vaccines being deployed worldwide. The announcements arrived even as President Biden banned travel to the United States from South Africa beginning on Saturday in hopes of stanching the spread of one variant. And Merck, the leading drug company, on Monday abandoned two experimental coronavirus vaccines altogether, saying they did not produce a strong enough immune response against the original version of the virus. Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech both said their vaccines were effective against new variants of the coronavirus discovered in Britain and South Africa, but they are slightly less protective against the variant in South Africa, which may be more adept at dodging antibodies in the bloodstream. The vaccines are the only ones authorized for emergency use in the United States. As a precaution, Moderna has begun developing a new form of its vaccine that could be used as a booster shot against the variant in South Africa. "We're doing it today to be ahead of the curve, should we need to," Dr. Tal Zaks, Moderna's chief medical officer, said in an interview. "I think of it as an insurance policy. I don't know if we need it, and I hope we don't," he added. Moderna said it also planned to begin testing whether giving patients a third shot of its original vaccine as a booster could help fend off newly emerging forms of the virus. Dr. Ugur Sahin, the chief executive at BioNTech, said in an interview on Monday that his company was talking to regulators around the world about what types of clinical trials and safety reviews would be required to authorize a new version of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine that would be better able to head off the variant in South Africa. Studies showing decreased levels of antibodies against a new variant do not mean vaccine is proportionately less effective, Dr. Sahin said. BioNTech could develop a newly adjusted vaccine against the variants in about 6 weeks, he said. The Food and Drug Administration has not commented on what its policy will be for authorizing vaccines that have been updated to work better against new variants. But some scientists said that the adjusted vaccines should not have to go through the same level of scrutiny, including extensive clinical trials, that the original versions did. The influenza vaccine that is updated each year to account for new strains are updated without an extensive approval process. The whole point of this is a rapid response to an emerging situation, said John Moore, a virologist at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York. Dr. Sahin said a similar booster shot eventually might be necessary to stop COVID-19. The vaccine's reduced efficacy may also mean that people would need to get the shots before the population achieves herd immunity. Scientists had predicted that the coronavirus would evolve and might acquire new mutations that would thwart vaccines, but few researchers expected it to happen so soon. Part of the problem is the sheer ubiquity of the pathogen. There have been nearly 100 million cases worldwide since the pandemic began, and each new infection gives the coronavirus more chances to mutate. Its uncontrolled spread has fueled the development of new forms that challenge human hosts in various ways. The more people get infected, the more likely that we will see new variants, said Dr. Michael Nusenwag, an immunologist at Rockefeller University in New York. If we give the virus a chance to do its worst, it will. Several variants have emerged with mutations that worry scientists. A form first detected in Britain is up to 50% more contagious than the virus identified in China a year ago, and researchers have begun to think it may also be slightly more deadly. Researchers in South Africa identified another variant after doctors there discovered a jump in COVID-19 cases in October. They alerted the World Health Organization in early December that the variant seemed to have mutations that might make the virus less susceptible to vaccines. A variant found in Brazil has many of the mutations seen in the South African form, but genetic evidence suggests that the two variants evolved independently. Preliminary studies in the laboratory had hinted that those viruses may have some degree of resistance to the immunity that people develop after recovering from the infection or being inoculated with the Moderna or Pfizer BioNTech vaccines. The variant identified in Britain has been found in at least 20 states in the United States. Before I read this sentence, I'm going to remind you that the South African version, as of today, has been reported in this country. The original story here that was published January 25th reads, "The version found in South Africa has not been reported in this country, but on Monday, health officials in Minnesota announced that it had documented the first case of infection with the Brazilian variant. It is far from certain that these are the only worrying variants out there. Few countries, including the United States, have invested in the kind of genetic surveillance needed to detect emerging variants. Britain leads the world in these efforts, sequencing of about 10% of its virus samples. The United States has analyzed less than 1% of its samples. Officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said this month that they expect to swiftly ramp up those efforts. Researchers at Moderna examined blood samples from 8 people who had received 2 doses of the vaccine and 2 monkeys that had been immunized. Neutralizing antibodies, the type that can disable the virus, were just as effective against the variant identified in Britain as they were against the original form of the virus. But with the variant circulating in South Africa, there was a 6-fold reduction in the antibodies' effectiveness. Even so, the company said those antibodies remain above levels that are expected to be protective. The results have not been published or peer-reviewed, but were posted online at BioRxiv. Moderna collaborated on the study with the Vaccine Research Center at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Zaks said that the new version of the Moderna vaccine, aimed at the South African variant, could be used, if needed, as a booster 1 year after people received the original vaccine. The need for such a booster may be determined by blood tests to measure antibody levels, or by watching the population of vaccinated people to see if they begin falling ill from the new variant. And that is your coronavirus update for this Thursday, January 28th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up, we will bring you the magazine Healthy Living. And then at 2 o'clock, we have USA Today with national news. At 3, it's local news. Here are some of the articles from our papers that the volunteers have been reading. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, ONG says Biden's leasing ban threatens jobs and tax revenue. There are better ways to address climate change, leaders say. Politics. Report says Conaway to start lobbying firm. Culture. George W. Bush childhood home may become national park. Plays on display. Curtain goes up on celebration of MCT. Midland County Historical Museum highlights rich history of Art Cole and decades of Midland Community Theater history. And from the Odessa American, Abbott talking oil and gas today in Odessa. Volunteers step up. Odessans show up in big way. Vaccine effort helped by locals who are pitching in. And Crisis Center podcasts aim to inform public. Those are some of the articles that our volunteers will be reading from the local newspapers today. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll have more news from the Wall Street Journal. And tonight at 7, it will be the first of several airings of our locally produced program, Texas Monthly Archives. In recent weeks, we've touched on true crime and we've touched on politics. Now we turn our attention to culture, and in particular, the music scene in Texas. We'll be reading articles in this week's Texas Monthly Archives about Leanne Rimes. We have a very short essay from Larry Gatlin, and we also have a Texanist article about Luckenbach. Also, an article about Lyle Lovett and more. So it will be music this week related to Texas in Texas Monthly Archives. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Meanwhile, be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 52 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 40s. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from the Health Magazine, and I'm going to begin with an article called How Low Can You Go? By Laura Wallace. Want to make one big change toward living better? Consider going zero waste. It's no longer a movement just for extreme bloggers and eco-warriors, and you don't have to be perfect to make the effort worthwhile. It's fair to say 2020 wasn't the greenest year. The pandemic meant that even some of the most eco-conscious among us went disinfecting wipes and disposable masks crazy for a while. We can cast aside the reusable grocery bags and went back to paper and plastic. We stashed hand sanitizer everywhere and stockpiled enough paper towels to sop up a swimming pool. Although we're still navigating COVID-19, 2021 may be a good time to look ahead and think about protecting the future of the planet. Here's an approach to zero waste, or at least a much less waste lifestyle. First, what does it mean, zero waste? Imagine if your home operated like nature does, where everything you buy or create could be reused, recycled, or returned to its original source, no landfill required. Author and green lifestyle pro Bee Johnson popularized the movement with her blog and then her book, Zero Waste Home, in 2013. But she started in 2006 when her family downsized from a large house to a small apartment in search of simpler, less car-dependent life. "We only moved in with the necessities," Johnson recalls, "and after a year, we got our stuff out of storage and found that we never even missed 80% of it. This led to a closer look at what they had been wasting. Johnson came up with the 5 R's that zero wasters live by: reuse, reduce, recycle, and rot. The order is important because the most impactful thing comes first. Refuse. Don't accept that plastic fork or that mailer or to begin with. As for what you do bring home, the other R's are the answer to then what. Since Johnson got started, the entire industry has evolved, with bloggers, authors, bulk store owners, and more extolling the virtues of living waste-free. Some do it for reasons for health, others for budget, but whatever your why, experts want you to know that you don't have to eliminate all your trash to make a serious difference, so just get started. And again, I want to reread the 5 R's. It's refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot. Is zero waste anti-woman? Some critics decry zero waste as just adding to the second shift of labor for women, since it rejects many of the convenience products that help liberate us from the house. Thanks in part to some overzealous bloggers, the movement has developed a reputation for being about baking bread and mixing up toothpaste and beating clothes against stones all day. "That scares the crap out of full-time working parents," Johnson says. "I was doing everything homemade when I started, and it's unsustainable." She still bakes her own bread because she likes to, but gradually she discovered she could save both money and time by buying things she needed, unpackaged whenever possible, and crucially, just living with less stuff. When you let it simplify your life rather than complicate it, zero waste can become automatic. Before you shop, do a trash audit. Take a serious look at what you've been throwing away and tackle the biggest stuff first. For us, it was mostly paper towels and paper napkins, says Deanna Taylor Heacock, owner of Good Bottle Refill Shop in Maplewood, New Jersey. "In recalling her pre-zero waste life, I'd buy huge things of them to get through the month. For others, it's food scraps or product packaging. Make a one-in, one-out rule. I do this for beauty products," says Kathleen Kellogg, founder of the GoingZeroWaste.com. "It's easy to accumulate so many. Just to try them, use them up fully before buying more. Know where you can buy unpackaged. As much as 15% of an item's cost is packaging," Johnson says. "So you're throwing money away. Find local or online shops for foods and bulks, as well as butcher shops, farmers markets, and bakeries that will let you bring your own containers or return theirs for reuse. And limit your outgoing. Resolve not to run to the store just for one thing. It invariably leads to unneeded purchases. For household and personal essentials, from laundry detergent to hair conditioner, Taylor Heacock suggests keeping a list of the needed supplies, then going to fill your containers just once a month. And you must be strict with yourself. The day before your shopping, you have to prepare. Have your gear ready. Keep all your reusable shopping supplies in a tote to grab and go. It will likely take a few weeks to create a system that's manageable for you and make it a habit. People picture me going to the store with a million glass containers, Johnson says, but that's not practical. We just bring 4 or 5 jars for anything wet, and everything else is lightweight cloth bags for things like grains and breads, flour, sugar, and cookies. Once you get home, empty and wash your bag and containers and toss them right back into the tote so you never go to the store without them. Focus only on food when grocery shopping. Tackle things like household cleaners and laundry detergents and other supplies during a separate once-a-month shopping trip. This also helps limit what you have to lug home from the supermarket. Shop the periphery of the grocery store. This is where you'll find whole, unpackaged foods, Johnson says, the fresh produce, the meats and fish counters, and the bulk bins. Look for choices. Choose sugar in a paper bag rather than plastic, and buy corn in its husk rather than pre-shucked and plastic-wrapped. Find it used for durable goods, clothing, sports gear, dishes, furniture. Think secondhand. Check out thrift stores and neighborhood swap groups, Facebook Market, and other online resale sites where items are constantly on offer. And don't overlook what your family members might have that they aren't using. My grandma had so much stuff to give me, including a beautiful collection of handkerchiefs. Buy new only if none of those turn up when you need it. Well, there are a few places that you could shop, so a few websites have done the legwork for you, so check out these apps. ZeroWasteHome.com helps you find places selling in bulk, lists in more than 100 countries. How about Litterless.com? Bulk shopping options in store and online, and the compost locations by state. And ZeroWasteDinner.com finds sellers of bulk goods and zero waste lifestyle products around the world. And now we'll talk about food prep and eating with the zero waste lifestyle in mind. Compost, the rot part of the 5 R's. On average, 50% of what a home throws away is organic matter that can be composted, Kellogg says, including food scraps, yard trimmings, and many paper products. You can invest in a backyard composter tumble. Look for a smaller bin made for indoor use, or find a service that will collect the scraps. All of these turn waste into something nourishing for the soil. Be smart when eating out. Bring containers for leftovers instead of accepting doggy bags. Don't have a silicone or metal straw with you? Skip the straw. Bring your own to-go cup for coffee, or sit down with a real mug. Store food like your grandpa did. Use glass instead of plastic in the fridge and pantry, and try cloth bags to keep bread fresh. Drink tap water. Use a filter if your local water doesn't taste good. Like bubbles, save money with a sparkling water maker such as SodaStream. Around the house, simplify cleaning supplies. You can mix up basic ones. Johnson cleans just about everything with vinegar, water, and Castile soap. Or just source versatile products from a refill shop. I'll do a blog post on an all-purpose cleaner, and people will respond and say, you know, you can make your own. And I say, let me stop you right there, says Taylor Heacock. I'm not making this stuff. I have to get dinner on the table. Upgrade the bathroom. A lot of the world uses bidets, and a toilet attachment is an inexpensive addition. It's clean and efficient, and you can use washable cloths for drying instead of wasteful paper. And bonus, when no one could find toilet paper last March, I wasn't worried, said Kellogg's. Replace disposable with reusable. Cloth napkins instead of paper. Broom and mop instead of disposable dusting cloths. You don't have to shell out for the specific zero-waste products unless you want to. I like certain products like unpaper towels because they serve a great purpose and look good, says Taylor Heacock. If it helps you make the transition, you go for it. Set yourself up for success. To get new habits to stick, keep reusable cloth or napkins wherever you'd normally keep the paper versions. Use them until they need laundering, then toss them in a bag or hamper close by and wash with your regular towel load. What's in the jar? Bea Johnson's famously reduced her household trash to what can fit in one jar for a year, a feat that has become a litmus test for zero wasters everywhere. Some of the bits and trash are unavoidable. They're different for people, but Johnson, they include things like the backing from stamps, stickers on the occasional fruit or tomato bought at a corner store, contact lenses, plus the seal on the top in the contact lens solution bottle, bristles pried from bamboo toothbrushes, labels on electrical appliance cords, small strips of silicone when the sink needs recaulking. And now I have a helpful habit for love that lasts. It's a tip. Remember to touch each other often. Hold hands under the dinner table. Walk arm in arm. Kiss, hug, snuggle on the couch while you're watching TV. Have sex, says Fitcher. Maintaining physical connection is one of the best ways to sustain feelings of love and attachment. Q&A. Fitness pro Lauren Williams has some tips for taking on the new year. What's your approach to resolutions? I like to pick a theme to follow throughout the year. Last year, my word was consistency. Having a theme helps me to get to the heart of something that I want to work on that's pervasive in my life. Rather than making one specific goal, it's about growing holistically in every area of my life, my health, my career, my relationships. How do you stay motivated? I think you have to find your deeper reason for doing something so it feels meaningful. Having a goal that doesn't change and that will still be important to you in 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years, like wanting to live longer, for example, will keep you more motivated than something more fleeting, like how you want your body to look right now. Well, what steps have you taken in recent months to prioritize your mental health? The past year was so tough that, in some ways, working on your mental health was non-negotiable. At the beginning of the pandemic, I created a group called Fit Support for my friends and myself. We met twice a week over Zoom to do a workout I created and just talk about everything from social justice to emotions to our families. It was a super safe space. Kitty Corner! Want to get the new year off to a fun start? Add an adorable fur baby to the family. Here's everything you need to know about bringing your kitten or two home by Hannah Harper. Prep your environment. Before welcoming your kitten home, or better yet, two kittens, so they'll always have company and a built-in playmate, you'll need to buy the essentials and work on baby-proofing your space. Think of kittens like human toddlers. They will get into everything, says Erin Mays, Assistant Director of Feline Behavior at Paws Chicago. Cover wires and cords and remove small or breakable objects from tables and shelves. Block off potential hiding places and get rid of any plants toxic to cats. Lilies, for example, can be deadly to kittens when ingested. Once everything is squared away, set up a small, quiet room with your cat's bed, food, and litter box. This will be their safe room until they can become acclimated to the rest of the house. There are some things you'll want to bring home from the shelter or breeder, including a blanket or toy for a familiar scent, and a few weeks' worth of food. A sudden change in food can cause stomach upset in kittens, so you will want to continue with the same food for at least a few weeks to reduce stress, says Koyoko Yoshida, DMV, co-founder of the Hudson Animal Hospital in New York City. Then you can transition their diet slowly, doing a mix of their old food and new food for several days. Another way to preemptively decrease anxiety in your kitten is to use a plug-in pheromone spray. Undetectable to humans, the spray will release cat mom pheromones into the space, calming your feline. And it's time to reset hashtag fool goals. We asked registered dietitians to weigh in on your 2021 diet resolutions so you can set and meet smarter goals, by Marianne Schwartz. Do a dry January. Taking a break from booze can help you hit reset on your relationship with alcohol after the holidays, lose some weight, and sleep better, among other benefits. And research shows that taking the month off, even if you go back to drinking on February 1, can instill healthier drinking habits in the long term. A UK study published in 2016 in the journal Health Psychology found that dry January participants drank less and felt more confident in their ability to resist drinking 6 months later, regardless of whether they had successfully completed the challenge. That said, if you think you might have a real problem with alcohol, a do-it-yourself challenge isn't a replacement for professional help. If an evening glass of wine is a ritual for you, find a substitute for it, says Lauren Slayton, RS, RDN, co-founder of Food Trainers in New York, who suggests bitters in soda, seltzer and a slice of citrus in wine glass, or kombucha, unless you're going for a complete sobriety, since it does have a touch of alcohol. Most importantly, then, plan for beyond January 31st. Mindfully introduce alcohol and collect data as you go. Note how you feel after drinking in different scenarios, weekends versus weekdays, not just physically but mentally too, paying particular attention to your sleep quality. That's dry January. Or eliminate added sugar. The last quarter of the year can feel like a total sugar fest. It's not a bad idea to rein in on it on January, says experts. The sweet stuff is everywhere, including in savory foods like bread and pasta, and too much has been linked to increased type 2 diabetes, heart disease, weight gain, cancer, premature aging. But eliminating sugar entirely is likely to backfire, as restrictions can lead to overeating and then restricting again, and so on. Instead, cut back. Starting with the biggest source for you, look at beverages and desserts, and when you're craving a treat in the evening, find a replacement to satisfy your sweet tooth, like some fruit or flavored tea. And if you're cutting back on sweets, think about upping your intake of good fats. Extra guac on your taco salad or olive oil on your veggies at dinner will make your meals more satiating, helping you to manage cravings. Eat a healthy breakfast every day. That's a great food goal. Starting your day with something nutritious helps you feel more energized and productive all morning. It also gets the tone of your day, making you more likely to stick with healthy habits. Plus, research shows that front-loading your calories earlier in the day may protect against obesity and the high blood sugar. Don't consider yourself a breakfast person? Well, try a few weeks of eating in the morning, regardless of whether or not you're hungry. Your body will start to want it and enjoy it. Thinking broadly about what kinds of food you can eat for breakfast, and emphasize that it's time to get in an extra serving of produce. Researchers also find that eating protein at breakfast helps to keep you satiated and satisfied longer. Avocado toast sprinkled with sunflower seeds, scrambled eggs with veggies, oatmeal with fruit and nut butter, and smoothies with protein powder are all easy options that fit the bill. Quit carbs? Carbs provide lots of energy, and eliminating them is not sustainable. Foods contain carbohydrates, and they are a broad category that includes everything from whole and refined grains to fruits and vegetables to lentils and chickpeas. Without them, you run the risk of not getting what you need nutritionally. Fiber, vitamin C, and B vitamins are especially hard to get without grains, fruits, and veggies. Swapping most of your highly processed carbs like soda, candy, white bread, and crackers for whole food ones such as sweet potatoes, black beans, and fresh fruit, that's how you quit carbs. And of course, we must talk about the Lose the Quarantine 15. Before you screw